Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And everyone, I think, is a little, you know, doing their own things at home. Not a lot of podcast listening. I'm not sure if there is. Maybe there is. But we thought that we would rerun a what we would call a classic. I'd call it a classic, wouldn't you?
It's a classic.
A classic X-Files Diaries episode this week. The interview we did with Frank Spotnitz. And it was a wonderful, delightful interview. And if you have already listened to it, you should listen to it again. And if you haven't, well, you guys are in for a tweet. Tweet. You guys are in for a tweet. Speaking of being in for a tweet, Jen, are you ready to read some tweets?
I am ready.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay, tweets of the week. These tweets are in response to our episode last week on the portion of the mythology that included One Breath and Red Museum. And we had a couple of very interesting responses to that. So thank you, everyone, for responding and for listening. From Monica File Fan, Monica says, a few random thoughts. I love Mulder's emotional reaction to Scully seemingly appearing out of thin air, reminiscent of Samantha disappearing in that way. I love Missy for giving him the kick he needed because I don't think anyone else could have. And the cross exchanges of hope again, the way the Mulder was accepted as family, listed as her friend, but also family. The fact that Scully's junk DNA that's exposed here tugs hard on that thread of continuity throughout the series is just huge. Mm-hmm. I took X to offer Mulder that of which he also wants, revenge, knowing it's futile. I agree the porn is comforting to him, as he obviously craves that intimacy he doesn't go out of his way to seek while immersed in finding the truth. It's habitual, soothing almost, and I peg him as watching softcore. Mm-hmm. I like how relaxed he is because it's not just about the act of sex. Lots of great points there from Monica. What did you think about those, Annie?
Yeah, well, first, yeah, the porn, I don't even remember what we said about the porn thing, but I agree with her completely that it is a comfort. It is like the way that he's watching it, and I know we probably joked about it on the podcast, but the way he's watching it and he's rewinding it, and there's obviously something he's watching that is comforting to him, because like we said, he's reacting in a way that isn't necessarily sexual. It's just comforting. And I think that's interesting because we know that Mulder isn't, you know, he doesn't really have a great relationship with his family. He doesn't have a lot of friends. So he probably doesn't have, I mean, and I don't even mean this in like a sexual way, but any sort of intimacy with anyone other than Scully. Mm-hmm. And like, she's gone. And it's kind of heartbreaking when you really think about it. And so, her pointing that out is really good. And yeah, the thing she said about Scully appearing when Samantha kind of disappeared, just the idea that he can't explain it, like it's something that eludes him once again, I think is really upsetting and triggering for him.
I really like that point too, because it draws attention to the fact that, you know, Mulder didn't find Scully, you know, she just appeared. And I think that is, you know, quite sort of frustrating for him in a lot of ways, because I'm sure he was darn well looking, and then for her just to show up like that and with no answers and possibly going to die as well, must have just been so frustrating and mystifying. I hadn't really thought about it that way, so I'm glad that Monica brought that up.
Also the thing she said about the idea of the junk DNA and like the Scully's DNA that has been used or whatever, that it's inactive. I thought that was really interesting for her to bring that up. Again, I feel like it's important to point that up because, you know, we get that throughout the series. And like she said, it's the thread of continuity. We do get, like, we get that with Gibson. Like, we kind of hear more about Scully. Like, these are just these little sort of hints that they give us about what exactly is going on with Scully, which continues throughout the rest of the series. So I just think that's cool that she brought that up.
Yeah, I also really like the idea that Missy is really the only person who could have given Mulder the kick that he needed when it came to Scully. That Mulder doesn't have a lot of people in his life that are there for him. And even though he's just met Melissa, you know, she feels comfortable in terms of, you know, she will tell him what needs to be said, and he is open enough to hearing it from her, because they sort of have like a sort of an instant little bond, because, you know, they have you know, Scully and Common, obviously. And yeah, I think that they have that relationship immediately where she's not afraid to say what she has to, and he will actually take it from her because he respects her and her opinion. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah, totally.
I like that a lot. From Kathy G. Kathy says, there are so many details in one breath that make no sense if you think about it. The guy stealing Scully's blood, the cigarette pack with CSM's address, Skinner's comment to Mulder, but it just doesn't matter. The episode as a whole works so beautifully, and I loved your take on it. I agree with Annie. Mulder crying is devastating, and David Duchovny brings it.
Thank you, Kathy.
Yeah, that's that. I think I'm definitely in the minority of being kind of about that. So yeah, I'm glad to hear. Yes, thank you. Annie needed to hear that because I was just being really weird about it. So I appreciate that.
It's just sad, and it's supposed to be sad. So I just,
it is.
Anyway.
I'm just weird. But I think that Kathy makes a really great point here that we can apply to the X-Files on the whole, which is just because things don't make sense doesn't mean it's great. And because there are things in this
doesn't mean it isn't great? Is that what you meant to say?
Yeah. That, you know, just this is, and this episode is a perfect example. There are things in it that don't quite hang together logically, but like, don't let that get in your way of loving the episode.
Right.
And it doesn't mean it's not beautiful, and it doesn't mean it's not great. So I think we have to kind of always approach the X-Files with that attitude of, you know, things don't always have to hold together perfectly for it to be perfect in other ways.
I mean, I in my mind, I can somewhat explain like two of the things she said. I know we were talking about the guy stealing Scully's blood for a while and how it did not make any sense. And I still don't have a really great explanation for that. So, again, if anyone has one, please let us know. I feel like the cigarette pack thing was just a very melodramatic way of like Skinner getting him the info. Right.
Yeah, but like, really, via a cigarette pack and a vending machine and this mysterious woman that has to give some kind of a coded message to Mulder. But it's just so unnecessarily complicated. But
I agree.
It's for the benefit of the drama.
Right. Right. I mean, it's silly.
It brings the drama.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Skinner's comment to Mulder. I mean, we talk about in retrospect. Yeah, it doesn't make sense because it seems kind of like a hurtful thing to say. But I feel like people do that sometimes. It's like when you're desperate and you're trying to assign blame. And I think people say things without thinking. And I think maybe Skinner probably had no idea how devastating what he said would be for Mulder. And I do think that it was important that it was said, because I think that Mulder does carry a tremendous amount of guilt, like for a long time, like right up through the revival, about his role in everything that happened to Scully. And I think Skinner's comment plays deeply into that. And so does it really make sense that he would say something like that? No, but I mean, I would rather have it there than not, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's a really good point. I think you're right that that's an important part of Mulder's story is the guilt he feels over everything that happens to Scully. And he kind of needed to kind of hear it from someone. And it made sense, I guess. If someone had to say it, it would be Skinner. Plus, we also have to remember who Skinner was as a character at that point in the series.
Is it different?
Because it was only season two, and as viewers, we still weren't really sure where he stood, whose side he was really on. He'd shown some indications that he was willing to take chances for Mulder and Scully, but generally speaking, he was still a little bit of a mystery. In later seasons, he became an obvious ally to them. If he'd said something like that in seasons 7 through 9, then it would have been like, dude, really? But, you know, at that point, it wouldn't have seemed that strange to us at the time, I don't think.
Right.
So I think looking back on it, it doesn't seem like a very Skinner thing to be kind of, you know, a little mean about it. But at the time, it seemed like, you know, he was kind of, you know, we weren't totally sold on him as a good guy. So it didn't seem odd.
Yeah, and that also he does, in a way, in my mind, or in his mind, make up for it later when he comes and has that conversation. Like, maybe, I kind of can fan wink my way around it and make me think, like, okay, well, he's trying to make himself feel better, trying to make Mulder feel better by going down and having this heart-to-heart talk that we have never seen them have before. And it seems like from Mulder's reaction to his conversation that, like, he is not used to being talked like this by anybody, let alone Skinner. So it kind of can make me think that maybe Skinner did feel a little bad, like maybe that was a little below the belt and he wanted to come down and make Mulder feel better. Regardless of how that came across to Mulder, it's still important that it's there. And it, I feel like it's kind of the other half to that scene. So, yeah. All of that long-winded talk to say that it kind of doesn't make sense, but I feel like it still is worthwhile. You know, exactly like she's saying. Yeah,
I see what you're saying. And it is quite typical of sort of early season Skinner that he seems not that nice in one scene and then seems beautiful in the next.
Yeah.
So it's that's kind of the way things often went with Skinner at that point. So that makes total sense with his characterization at that stage. So, I can live with it, but it does always kind of. It just hurts my heart every time. Yeah. From Emily Page Ballou. Emily says, the snake. This is the snake in the cold open that was being shot at by the Scully siblings. Mm-hmm. The snake. Worth noting that when Scully accidentally kills the bunny as a child, it is also because of Bill. Yeah. Also because the Bill is all in caps. I just have to point out. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what episode the bunny was from. Is that
Emily?
Am I thinking? Yeah, I was going to say.
Christmas Carol. Or,
yeah. I kind of blocked that one out because I can't bear animal death of any kind. So I had kind of forgotten about the bunny. But yeah, Bill, come on, dude.
Yeah. Nice. That is a nice connection.
That's a very good connection. Yeah. Everything. When anything bad happens to Nana Scully, can Bill be far behind? Apparently not. From Cindy Levin. Hey, Cindy. Just FYI, on a podcast from 2015, Jillian said everyone referred to one breath as one breast for obvious reasons. Also, while in the boat scene, her breasts were so engorged, she pictured herself just squirting breast milk at everyone. And Cindy tells us that podcast was Idiot with Chris Hardwick, and she found that on iTunes. So that sounds great. So it's from 2015, before the revival. So yeah, but let's all look that one up on iTunes, because that sounds like a fun interview to listen to.
I feel like I had heard somewhere that one breast thing, I had never heard that the title, but definitely not the breast mix milk swirl. But I
so
not,
she, yeah, she obviously knew. She obviously was well aware of how it was coming across.
Yeah, not to like get too graphic, but I feel her. I can sympathize with that feeling. Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, I think most moms can probably sympathize with that quite viscerally.
I would have called it two breasts to be more accurate. Because there were two of them and they were large and in charge. But yeah, that's very funny. And yes, well stated, Cindy.
Yeah. So thanks for that that little tidbit of trivia, Cindy. That's always appreciated. We love hearing everyone's X-Files research, because as X-Files, we are great at picking up these little tidbits. And it's great when we can get the source like that, too. So we can all go and listen to that if we want to. So thanks, everyone, for listening, as always. And thanks for bringing us your tidbits and your opinions. We'd love to hear them. Tweet at us anytime at XFD Podcast. And we'll see you on Twitter there. So thanks.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
All right. So Frank Spotnitz. Mm. He needs no introduction, Jen. Anyone listening to this podcast knows who Frank is. You know, worked on The X-Files for since season 2 through season 9 and on I Want to Believe. Worked on Millennium, worked on The Lone Gunman, you know, executive producer of all those shows, Night Stalker. He actually made this new show, Man in the High Castle, which is on my list of a million things that I need to watch. I really, really wanted to check it out. Medici is also another one of his newer ones. And we just learned like last week that he has a new show coming out that I'm super pumped about, which is Leonardo, about the life of Leonardo da Vinci. I'm like a huge art history nerd, and so I'm super excited about that. But oh my God, this is kind of came out of nowhere. We didn't tell anybody because we were, you know, not sure it was all going to come together, but it did. And Jen and I had like the best day ever getting to sit and talk to Frank, right?
Yes, the highlight of my year so far, quite possibly. I mean, it was just so amazing. Like I put it up right up there with sort of meeting David and Jillian. I was that excited about it. So it was awesome.
I would completely agree with that. He was so nice and gracious, and I had a great time talking to him. We had a fun interview, and we hope you guys enjoy listening to it. Well, thank you so much for doing this, first of all.
Sure. My pleasure.
I think I can speak for both Jen and myself saying that this is one of the highlights of our nerdy lives to get to chat to you.
It is.
Yeah. I hope it's not. I hope I don't disappoint you in the end. Well, that's a lot to
look
forward to.
Of course not. Of course not. You've actually been pretty busy this week interacting with fans, right? I remember talking to some friends and they were like, is this real? Is this really happening? But it's real, right? You can verify.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Take that much time, actually.
Yeah. What inspired you to do that, to reach out to the fans?
Well, actually, it was a new application that didn't exist before that Avi became aware of. And so she said, do you want to try it out? And I said, sure. So it was an experiment.
Oh, cool. Well, that sounds really awesome. So anyway, here we are on X-Files Diaries. I don't know if you've heard of us, Frank, but we are we're huge shippers. And I know you know this term. So we're gonna probably be asking you some mostly questions about the Mulder-Scully dynamic and the evolution of that throughout the show.
Okay.
If that's okay. Hopefully that's okay with you.
It is. I'm going to try to remember. It's been a while.
Well, we heard you said at the X-Fest panel that you guys were you didn't want to change the direction of the relationship too soon because you didn't want to ruin the show. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, I know as a showrunner, obviously, if you end the tension, it's obviously gonna affect the show. But what do you have anything else that you'd like to add about that?
Yes. Well, this was a constant tension, really, from the beginning of my arrival on the X-Files. It was already an issue, which was, why wasn't Scully changing? Why wasn't their relationship changing? Because even by season two, Scully had been on, 25 cases or more, right? So how is it she could still be such a skeptic?
Right.
And in the voiceover, this is going to be a long answer, sorry, but there's
it's all right.
More than just their romantic relationship. It's just sort of the slow pace of change in their characters. So in Colony and Endgame, there's a voiceover in that two-part episode, which was my first credits, where Scully kind of explains, even though I've seen a lot, I still look at it all through the lens of science. And that was our attempt to try and justify why, in fact, we were not going to change her character.
Right.
Because I think Chris especially felt like this is the dynamic that makes this show work. It's an episodic TV show. Of course, the contradiction we had built into the show without quite, I think, consciously realizing it was that it had these what would come to be called mythology episodes where they were changing and growing and their lives were moving on. But then you had all these 18 episodes a year where it was just standalone and you didn't want to mess with the dynamic that made those episodes work. So, as you know, like in later seasons, we did start to play more with the believer-skeptic dynamic between Mulder and Scully. And then obviously after Mulder left and Doggett came in, we really had to rethink that dynamic. But certainly for the first five seasons, we were very, very conservative about that. And the romantic dynamic between them, I mean, it was just so clear from season one that they had this astonishing chemistry
right
together, which, you know, and I give Chris all the credit in the world for casting them, but who could really have predicted just how powerful that was? And it's tension, right? It's romantic sexual tension. And if you start to, as you said, if you start to give that to the characters, you release some of that tension.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we were very reluctant to do that. So I remember at the end of Pusher, Vince wanted a hug or, you know, maybe even a kissing on the forehead or something like that. And Chris was like, you know, absolutely not. You know, that's just way too far, too fast.
Yeah.
And ended up settling for them just touching hands.
Yeah, I remember you telling that story at X Fest, and I think I agree. Actually, I'm a shipper, but I'm kind of on the side of Chris, and I think a lot of my fellow shippers kind of hate me for that. I think, but I completely understand yeah. why you want to hold on to that. You don't want to give into that too soon. I mean, that's what makes it so delicious is just the waiting. Yeah. And I guess I have a question too. I mean, I know you probably have different thoughts on this than Chris. But do you think that we were always meant to believe there was a romantic attraction between Mulder and Scully? Because I always wonder this straight off from the pilot, the episode in the motel when, you know, she has to take off her robe and he has to look at her back. I mean, that's supposed to be sexy. Like, it's supposed to be, you know, titillating. And I'm like, was Chris maybe pressured to do that because this was a pilot? I always wondered this. Or is this something he always wanted to torture people with?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I know you came in a little bit later, but yeah. I've always been curious.
But my impression was no. My impression was that was a happy accident, discovering this. You know, and I think it's the way David and Jillian played it. I see now, you know, in the GIF age, you see people make GIFs out of these things, but they held eye contact so often. And you just, there was no, that was not purely professional. You just couldn't help feeling there was something, there was an attraction there that also you couldn't equally start to want to see fulfilled.
Yeah.
And so we as producers and storytellers wanted to capitalize on that and delay the fulfillment of it as long as possible. But then you reach a certain point where you go, what is wrong with these two people if they don't start on this?
I mean, and I think that you guys played with that really interesting, especially I feel like Fight the Future was a huge turning point for that in like, hey, well, we're putting this out here. This isn't something that you're just making up in your head, guys. This is something we're aware of, but we're not quite there yet. And I mean, I loved it. I think that was a great sort of moment that the kiss moment like encapsulated exactly where they were and exactly where we weren't going to take them quite yet. So I applaud you guys for that. You hurt a lot of people, but it was very, very brave. And we love it. We love it.
We love that now.
I never hear anybody talk about this. Maybe you do talk about it. And I just am not in on these conversations. But I mean, everybody, you know, screamed and was upset when the bee stung her and kept them from kissing. But to me, the bigger decision, the more important thing was they clearly wanted to kiss.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That intent was there. Yep.
That had never been established before.
Yep.
And once that moment happened, then it was only a matter of time before they actually did kiss.
Yeah. It's true. It was a long amount of time, I suppose, relatively speaking. But then you guys threw Diana Fowley in there and you just messed with everybody's hearts again. We love. We love you for it, Frank. Don't worry about it. I have a question about you had a quote on this. This was the X-Cast interview I was listening to, and I just loved this quote. I'm going to quote you back to you, if that's okay.
Yes.
You said, the thing about the X-Files that gets lost is that Mulder and Scully were after the truth. Scully was a scientist, and while Mulder was a conspiracy theorist, he respected Scully and respected science. And that's the worrying part, when people are so caught up in conspiracy theories that they lose any respect or regard for objective truth. I know you, and that was a great quote. Sorry, it was a long quote. But I know you're probably talking about maybe like modern times and how the X-Files is still relevant nowadays. But is there such a thing as objective truth on the X-Files? And I ask this just because there are a lot of things are left obviously unanswered. A lot of things actually contradict. And I wonder how much of that is actually intentional. And if you guys were just trying to kind of make a point with that.
Yes. It's a really good question, because the truth is that objective truth never wins in the X-Files.
Right.
And really objective truth or scientific truth or rational truth is our strategy to ultimately lead you to a question rather than an answer. And Scully is like the most brilliant member of the audience, throwing up all these objective truths, scientific observations and arguments, rational arguments, only to be ultimately confounded.
Right.
Because I think the reason one of the many reasons why The X-Files succeeded and has endured as long as it has is because it leaves you with a sense of mystery and awe and wonder. And you look up at the night sky and you just wonder what's out there. Or you look into the darkness and you know,
yeah.
You can be scared. You can be scared too, but it's hope and fear. And I think that's why the show appealed to me. It's not that I believe in aliens or monsters particularly. I don't. But, and you don't even have to be a religious person to just be aware that there's a mystery to the universe, that there's more to life than we will ever understand. And, you know, The X-Files touches on that sense of mystery and grace. And, you know, that's kind of profound, really. And I think, you know, to me, the one supernatural thing that is undeniable is love.
Oh.
And I think that's what, you know, that's the power of the Mulder-Scully relationship, is that it's founded on love and trust and respect. But that's the proof, you know, that's our daily proof that there's more to life than what you can measure, is we all see the power of love in our everyday lives.
I think a lot of fans would agree with that, that at the end of the day, we love the sci-fi element. We love the monsters and the horror and all of that stuff. But I think it's the actual Mulder and Scully characters and their relationship that sort of anchor the show and keep people coming back. I mean, I know you say that, like, yeah, you have to sort of drag out this romantic inevitable connection. I wouldn't have been surprised if you guys had waited till the very, very, very last episode, honestly. So, I mean, I was happy that there was some stuff that kind of started to be peppered throughout. But, you know, there are definitely many things that were not shown, that were, like, you know, I would assume purposefully not shown. You said something about how when you guys were writing the finale, and I'm not, this question isn't specifically about the finale, but there was so much plot coming at you that you, in retrospect, had wished that maybe that you guys had focused a little bit more on the emotional aspect of the show. Are there any scenes, like, specifically that we didn't maybe get to see between Mulder and Scully that you would have liked to maybe had a shot at doing that we didn't get to see?
No, I wish I could say, oh, yes, we should have, you know, shot this scene that we wrote, but we didn't shoot. I think it was a question of approach at the time. And you do have to, like, put yourself back in the mindset of television in that era. And the fact that we had sort of, you know, according to me anyway, we sort of stumbled into this whole mythology thing. And we were trying to wrap it up after 9 years. And what we thought the audience wanted, in part because we kept hearing it on the internet, right, and from TV reviews, were answers. That everybody wanted answers. You'd ask all these questions, you better not go away without answering these questions. And I think we spent so much time focusing on these plot answers that we didn't spend enough time thinking about the emotional journey these people had been on for 9 years. And where it had taken them and how they had changed and the costs they'd both borne and how they felt about that and how they felt about each other. And it's not that we didn't think about it at all. There are some scenes in that final episode that do address that. But looking back on it, I think that was far more important than all the plot stuff that we tried to surface in the end.
Yeah.
And I think now when I set out to do a TV show, that's all I'm thinking about is the emotional journey of the characters and trusting that the plot stuff, you know, I will figure out, but it's secondary.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because I feel like a lot of the plot stuff in The Truth was sort of just reminding people of things that already happened, like things that you guys had already answered. And I feel like a lot of fans maybe aren't aware that, hey, a lot of these questions had already been answered, and this is all, like Scully says, all the answers are there, you just have to know where to look. So, I mean, I personally found it frustrating from my perspective, because I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, I already know all this, get to the Mulder-Scully stuff. So I just think it's kind of funny how, in the end, like, people claiming that the mythology things weren't answered kind of maybe bit people in the butt in the end, because you guys gave them what they wanted, and, yeah, it ended up, you know,
that's a conversation we had amongst ourselves. We're like, we have answered these things, but they think we haven't.
Right.
So we're going to put in this very clear narrative, and we're going to connect all the dots in a way so that everybody can understand it. I will say the other thing is that back then, a huge percentage of your audience didn't watch most episodes of the show.
Right.
So we were aware that even if the diehard fans knew all this already, there was going to be a significant percentage of the audience that would need to be kind of caught up and have everything explained to them.
Yeah. I mean, and that's fair too. Like you said, as a product of the times, like people didn't obsessively record and rewatch and go yeah. through. And I mean, the show nowadays really benefits from that. I mean, I know Jen, you could probably agree with me on that, that like mm-hmm. when we rewatch and go back, we pick up on things that I'm like, well, wow, Chris Carter, look what you did. You put that thing back in episode of season three, and then it's relevant again in 9 years. Like, and it is pretty incredible. I just wanted to give you a shout out and Chris a shout out and all the writers a shout out for actually probably something that you don't get much credit for, because I think people assume that you didn't do that, but you did do that. And you as a mythology guru, I just, well done. I just have to say
that. We really did try to do that, but I have to say that was one of the things that amazed me, because I would go online. I would look at the comments after each show. I couldn't help myself, as painful as it sometimes was. And I was always amazed, like the things, as you say, like something we mentioned in season two, and then it comes up again in season five. And they're like, yep, they're right on it, even though they hadn't seen the show in 3 years, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Because not every episode was being repeated. Not everybody had the VHS copies at that point, and it was incredible how alert the fans were to what was going on.
Yeah, it was definitely a different experience watching it, because I did watch all of the episodes as they aired, because I'm that old. And so it was a different experience for me watching it over the 9 year span than Annie, who came in near the end and then sort of went back and watched the initial seasons after the fact in a different form. So it was different for us that were watching it live, because it was like, we had to remember 9 years back by the time we got to that finale. So even though I was like a devoted fan, there was still like things that in that ninth season finale that I was like, oh yeah, right. Okay. Now this starts to make sense. I mean, I should have known it all, but I guess, I don't know, but because the time period or just because I just wasn't putting the clues together. I wasn't picking up on some of those mythology aspects. So to me, I was happier with the finale than a lot of folks were, just because I needed the reminders. And so I was fine with that. I think to a certain extent that might have been a different experience watching it back in 2002 versus, you know, after the fact. So it worked for me. I loved it. So, I mean, I was just really happy to see Mulder back, and I was happy with the whole thing.
I think the other thing is, you know, we thought we were going to go on to make more movies.
Right.
So we thought that was just sort of a, you know, okay, well, that chapter's going to end, and then we're going to go right on to the next chapter. And of course, it didn't work out that way.
Right. Well, let's talk about that, actually. I do want to talk about I Want to Believe in a minute, but I wanted to kind of my previous question about things that maybe we didn't get to see. I want to specifically talk about Mulder leaving in season 9, because I completely realize that you guys obviously didn't have David to shoot any scenes and all that. But do you think that maybe it maybe harmed the season not even really addressing it very much? Because I feel like you guys talked about it, Nothing Important Happened Today. You talked about it very, very briefly. It was almost like a throwaway line about the reason Mulder left. And I know that it's there. Like, the answer is there, again, like we just said, if you read and you watch the episode. But I feel like this had ramifications, because I had a conversation with somebody the other day who, to this day, thinks that Mulder left because he's a deadbeat dad. And that completely shocked me, because I was like, well, I never, ever took it that way. But my friend was just like, well, you know, that's just how it looked. He was there and then he was gone. And we never even really got a good explanation for why he left. It was all kind of vague, which I kind of agree with. I assume that the danger was real enough for him to leave. So it's fine. But do you think that not getting to see that scene, my long rounded question, not getting to see a scene or a bigger explanation for something that was going to affect the entire season was a bit of a missed opportunity? Or do you think that was purposeful?
It sounds like it was.
Like it was. Sorry.
I think to me, I mean, if you know Mulder's character, I mean, there's just no way he would ever be a deadbeat dad.
Exactly. That's kind of what I said, but yeah.
So much integrity. They're both, Mulder and Scully, are both such deeply romantic characters. I don't mean that in a sexual way. They're both characters such integrity and conscience that that's just not even possible. It never would have occurred to me that anybody would look at it that way.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me either. That's why I said I was really shocked. But I mean, it was just one of those things that I was like, yeah, well, we didn't really talk about it too much. To me, it seemed perfectly in character. I think Scully would send him away. That's kind of what happened, right? She sent him away because the danger was very real.
That's exactly
and
right.
I think
and this is the other thing that happened is the last, you know, 2 years of the show, there were so many external obstacles in our way in terms of telling the story the way we would have liked to tell it. Like, obviously, we didn't want David to leave. And then when he did leave, we didn't want to be limited in the number of days we could use him, but we were. And in, even Jillian, you know, there were all these constraints on her availability. And it was quite a jigsaw puzzle trying to make the show feel seamless and organic when behind the scenes, we were constantly wrestling with all these logistic impediments and the budget as well. You know, the budget of the show had exploded. And so it was really quite challenging.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me that we missed an opportunity, but there may have been behind the scenes reasons for it.
Right. I can imagine so. But I actually think that it kind of came full circle at the end of the season with William, how Scully has to make this decision to let him go as well. And it kind of weirdly bookended the season because, you know, she did the same thing with Mulder at the beginning. So I thought that was actually heartbreaking, but kind of a nice close to that storyline. Was giving up William always part of the plan? Are you aware if that was?
No, we didn't know, you know, because we didn't know if the show was going to end in season 9. That was a decision we made, you know, I guess around November, December, I'm sure I'm telling you things you already know, but, you know, the ratings suddenly were significantly smaller for season 9 than they'd been for season 8. And I do believe the network would have continued with season 10 with Doggett and Reyes as the leads. Mm-hmm. But we just felt we didn't want to limp out, you know, and so we made the decision to end. And so then it was sort of like, okay, we need to have some closure on the William storyline. And, you know, what's interesting to me is if you look at Mulder and Scully as human beings, you know, Mulder lost his sister and then his father to this fight, but then Scully lost her sister, Mulder, mm-hmm. and her son. So, you know, it's about sacrifice and loss for the truth, whatever that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Is there a reason, I have to ask you this question, Frank, because it's always driven me crazy. Is there a reason that they had Skinner tell Mulder that William had been given up in the truth and we didn't get to see the scene where Scully gets to tell him? I've always wondered why that decision was made.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, what? Skinner told you?
Yeah.
Anyway, just curious.
I'm sure there was a reason. I'd have to go back and look. I'm sure I haven't done it in time.
Would you indulge a couple shippers in some shippy questions, Frank?
I will try.
You'll do your best. If hell froze over, and Chris Carter actually said, hey, Frank, we're going to do the scene where Mulder and Scully actually finally get together, and be that they admit their feelings or whatever, there's a change that occurs that we don't get to see. How would that scene go? How would you write that scene?
Gosh.
Putting you on the spot here.
Well, first of all, I would love to see that scene.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear.
So would we.
I would, because I think it would be so revealing of their relationship. I think, first of all, it would be no surprise to either of them, those feelings. I think they both know they exist. But I think there would have to have been a context for why it's finally happening now.
Right.
So there would have been something in the narrative where at this moment, this is going to happen. It's going to happen in this episode, if you will. And I think it would have been really moving, you know, and obviously sexy and all that stuff, but it would have been a very touching scene. So, yeah.
It's interesting because you guys were able to sort of get them together, I should say, quote unquote, consummate their relationship without actually showing anything. So, like, it was almost like you had the best of both worlds. You got to get them together so you could tell the fans, all right, they got together, but we're not going to show you any of it so that we can maintain that tension, which is actually super brilliant. I can't think of any other show that's done that way.
Well, and I wish we could say, you know, we had it all planned out, and so we knew how brilliant we were being, but it really was a function of David saying he was leaving in season 7. And we had the moments, we knew in our mind there were moments when this could have happened, when this could have been consummated in the narrative we'd already designed. And so we made the decision at the end of that season to have Scully be pregnant. But it wasn't made before then. You know, it was made at that point.
Right. I'm going to get real specific on you here because I know I read that you guys – Jillian's episode, All Things, you guys put in the actual, like, sex scene, I should say, quote, hint at a sex scene later. Like, that wasn't actually in her original script, right? I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that.
But my specific question, I don't know, maybe this is a question for Jillian, but you'd have to know. Of all of the things that you guys could have shown us, why was the decision made to show Scully, like, leaving Mulder in the middle of the night? Do you know why? Sure.
Scully leaving Mulder in the middle of the night. You're going to have to remind me what scene this is.
The only scene where we see them actually having had sex, it's very clear that it's happened, and you see Mulder asleep in the bed, and Scully's getting dressed, and she's just leaving his apartment. Do you not remember this scene?
I don't remember. Oh, I got to go back.
Well, yeah.
Do is do this again. We'll watch the scene, and then I'll go, okay, now I know why. But I haven't looked at it in so long. I don't remember.
All right. Well, I was just curious. Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. I just always wonder
not
why...
Not everyone watches The X-Files every single day like Andy and I do.
But
yeah, no, you got plenty to do.
Yeah. I wanted to ask your episode, Detour, season 5. When Scully comes into Mulder's room with the wine and cheese, is she putting the moves on Mulder? Level with us, Frank.
That wasn't my intention.
Oh, you're breaking hearts.
We'll just decide that for ourselves.
Yeah.
Having some fun, living life. You know, she's just come out of her cancer remission, right? And
Yeah. You're just having fun. That's the way I saw it.
And Mulder, fair enough. In all of our minds, she's, you know, trying something, and Mulder is too hyper focused on Mothmen to pick up on her little signals. Yeah. So, but it's pretty hilarious. We loved it.
It's a fair reading of it, but that wasn't the way I intended.
All right.
Good stuff. That's what shippers do. We find clues in things, whether they were meant to be there or not.
You know, there's no saying you're wrong. You could be right.
Yeah.
All right. I like that.
You never know. Real quick, last super shippy question. And then I had another little thing to ask. Millennium, when you guys finally decided to have Mulder and Scully kiss, is this meant to be sort of ambiguous, or was this sort of a, hey, this is their first kiss, this is the way we're treating this, this is their first kiss? Because there is quite a debate going on in the fandom as to if...
Always.
There always is a debate going on, and we're just curious.
That was entirely deliberate. That was exactly why we thought, this is perfect. We have this up. We have Millennium. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, the new year coming in. What do people do at New Year's Eve? They kiss.
Right.
Have to take advantage of this moment with Mulder and Scully, and we have to play it in such a way that the audience will be debating this forever. So it was completely our intention to make it. You know, is it or isn't it?
You are slippery there, Frank. I like it.
I love it. I think it's great. I think it's great that you wanted us to debate it, because we still do to this day. So it worked perfectly.
I feel good about that.
Jen and I always joke that you guys literally waited 7 years just so that you could do that Y2K joke. Right? Like, how long had you had that one in your back pocket? I have to know. I love it. So I'm sure you've been asked this before, but there's obviously a lack of, I would say, female perspective in the writer's room. And considering that this show, one of the main leads is a woman, were there ever any times that you regretted or wished or hoped that maybe you had more female input?
All the time.
All the time. Well, that's a good answer, Frank.
No, I think it's a great failing of the show. And the show would have been better for sure if we had more women. We had Sarah Charno in season two, and then Cam Newton in season three, and then we had Nandi Bowe on the Lone Gunman. But other than that, it was an overwhelmingly male, overwhelmingly white writing staff. And I will say it wasn't for lack of trying. And in fact, at the time, there was a lot of uproar about how older writers could not be employed. And I remember when I was finally in a position where it was my job to help find writers for the show, calling the Writers Guild and asking for a list of older writers so I could start, you know, calling them, trying to be a little more diverse in terms of age. And they said, "We're not allowed to give you that. We can't tell you that." I'm like, "Well, that's not helpful at all." But they said, "We're not allowed to even ask that question. Guild membership." And so I regret it, but I have to say, in our defense, like, it was not easy at that time to have a diverse staff. It wasn't easy, I'd say, to have a staff at all, because most of the shows in that era were cop shows, doctor shows, lawyer shows. To get people who had writing samples that were even vaguely appropriate for the X-Files was really challenging. And that's why we ended up getting writers like Jeff Bell and Steve Maeda. They were feature writers who had feature scripts that we could see might make them appropriate hires for X-Files, right? I think that for both of them, it was their first jobs in television. But, and I think, you know, if the X-Files ever came back or continued, then it would be really great to have more diverse, you know, representation in the writer's room.
Yeah, they definitely made a good attempt to sort of remedy that in the revival. I know that you weren't involved in the revival, but it was very nice to see from this end. The show has gotten some hate over the years, however, for portraying female victims a bit insensitively. I'm sure you've heard about this. Maybe, like, I would say, for example, Small Potatoes, where all these women are raped, but nobody seems to care about what happened to these women. And Postmodern Prometheus, I know, is a big one. People talk about the idea that these women are, you know, impregnated by this farmer and his science or whatever. But still, we don't really spend a lot of time on their reactions. And then more recently, this Smoking Man Scully thing. Again, I know you weren't part of that. Do you think that if you were working on the show in today's climate, that these things might have been handled a little differently? Or was the focus always supposed to be not on that, you know?
No, I'm sure you have to handle them differently today, and that's probably a good thing. I think at the time we were aware, but it was like, you know, both of those episodes are pseudo comedic, right?
Right.
And we're like, oh my God, but if we go there, you're never going to be able to enjoy this episode. So I think it was sort of a decision to try to ground it in a kind of fantasy realm that would have, it would have utterly defeated the episode. It actually would have made it impossible, right? You couldn't have enjoyed those stories if you looked too closely at the reality of what was going on.
Right.
So I think that was an attempt to kind of misdirect. But I would say, again, in the writer's defense and in our defense of the X-Files, I mean, I do think you'd be hard pressed to find a TV show, not just in the 1990s, but any time, that generally represented women as in a more, you know, respectful, empowered, equal way. You know, I think Scully is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, female TV character in TV history. And
absolutely,
we were way ahead. You know,
You actually were. I wanted to bring that up because I know people wonder about it, but I think that there was a little bit of unfair criticism, I think, in terms of that. Like, I think you guys actually were ahead of the time in most regards, especially considering your female lead and how amazing Scully was and how different she was as a character. And it's strange to me somehow that kind of gets lost when people like to talk about controversy and things that were maybe handled differently because of the times. But it, you know, just so you're aware, it isn't lost on us. We do know that. And, you know, I think everybody kind of thinks that maybe things could have been done a little differently, but it all depends on the time frame that we're in. Yeah.
We're just in a funny time in our culture right now. It is sort of it's a culture, and I think it's the internet and the social media environment that kind of promotes it. But it's where people are looking for things to judge
or to be outraged about. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's plenty to judge, and they're right. I'm not gonna argue about it. But you know, everybody's imperfect. Everybody's flawed. There's gray, and there's a spectrum of good and bad, and we're not immune to, you know, nobody's immune to that. And that's just the way it is, you know. We're not perfect.
But definitely.
I would certainly say that watching it back in the 90s, nothing that was done on the X-Files struck me as remotely inappropriate at the time. I was exactly what you said, Frank, that, you know, I was just kind of like, hey, what fun episodes. Mm-hmm. And it's only sort of in recent years that other folks may have pointed out that, oh, this is actually problematic. And I'm like, oh, geez, it is. I never actually thought about it that way because it was the context in which I watched it initially. So I think from my point of view, you know, as a feminist, I wasn't horrified at the time, but it was all about context and society and culture. And things are seen differently now, and that's fine. So they should be. But I can certainly understand what you're saying about the context and about how maybe we don't fully appreciate how great the character of Scully was and is because of the context that, you know, we compare her with female characters today. She still comes out really strong, but back in the 90s, especially then, it was really groundbreaking. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. How long do we have you, by the way, Frank? I didn't want to push into your time.
No, I'm okay.
Okay, good. I have a question about Monica Reyes. You guys had you had the opportunities to spend an entire season with Doggett and Reyes as sort of the lead, season 9. And do you think that there was a little bit of a discrepancy between, in bringing the feminism back into it, the way that you guys handled Doggett and his backstory and the way that there was nothing about Monica? Or was that intentional? Was she meant to have a little bit of mystery? I remember reading somewhere that she might have even originally been intended to be a gay character, and you guys shied away from that. I don't know how true that is. I just read it somewhere, but
it wouldn't surprise me if that was discussed and that was a possibility. We ended up having kind of a romantic, a suggestion of a romantic relationship with Doggett, romantic feelings toward Doggett,
right,
with her and with the Brad Fulmer character. There's a bit of a love triangle going on.
Yeah.
But I think it was that really Reyes, who came in before Doggett, right? I'm getting that right. Was really meant to be a female Mulder, right? But not Mulder. But she's the believer character, and we didn't want her to have suffered the exact same kind of loss that Mulder had suffered. So she had a very different spirit to her beliefs. But when we introduced Doggett, we felt that was much more threatening to the audience, Doggett's character, because we felt like the audience was going to think we were trying to replace Mulder.
Right.
Right? Because, you know, Scully was there with Reyes. But in this case, you're having Robert Patrick instead of David Duchovny.
Well, I think Reyes showed up later. Reyes showed up in, like, late season 8.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. But with Doggett's character, I think we felt we need to be able to defend this character because the audience is going to hate him otherwise.
Right.
And so I think we needed a more robust backstory and a more robust point of view for him. Whereas you're right, Reyes comes in later in season 8 and it was more, there's just less pressure on her character, I think, than there was on Doggett's.
Yeah. And I think too, that maybe she wasn't, I don't even know if she was maybe even not intended to be a regular until season 9. I don't know if that was a decision you guys made when she came in like late season 8, but there was always a bit of mystery to her. Like we didn't really know too much about her backstory. Like Doggett had this really cool, not cool, it's tragic, but like a tragic backstory. And we knew kind of where he came from, what all that was. And I have to say, this is kind of apropos of nothing, but I think Robert Patrick did an amazing job at an impossible job, because I remember watching that thinking, no, this is not going to happen. And by two or three episodes in, I was fully on the Doggett train, like not as a replacement for Mulder, but I was like, yeah. I am enjoying this character. They're doing a great job with the dynamic and kind of shifting it, as you were alluding to earlier. Scully is now having to deal with the belief aspect because she needs to believe to find Mulder. I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about it. So I think you guys did a great job. That was kind of a non sequitur, but yeah.
Yeah, I think you did an incredible job too. And it was very hard to hate him, as much as I think a lot of people wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't. And a lot of that was Robert's performance.
Yeah, a lot of it was.
I was just going to say that's a really good point about how we wanted to hate him, because I wasn't quite as on board the Doggett train from the beginning as Annie was. I was kind of like, where's Mulder? And it was only years really later that I went back and started to properly appreciate season 8. But at the time, it was kind of frustrating because I did want to hate him. And part of me just hated his presence, but I couldn't hate him. So it was kind of like this sort of weird sort of cognitive dissonance. So it made it kind of, it was a weird experience watching season 8 for me at the time. But looking back on it now, as I think a lot of fans do, we appreciate it more in retrospect than we did at the time, because at the time we were too busy being mad that Mulder wasn't there. And looking back on it, we appreciate how great it is.
This is something I've never said to anybody, but really what happened was when I was a kid, I watched a show called The Wild Wild West. And the original stars of that show were Robert Conrad and Ross Martin. And they were partners. And at some point, they lost Ross Martin and they had to bring in a replacement. And it was like, the show was just never as good. And there was nothing wrong with the actor that replaced Ross Martin, except that he wasn't Ross Martin.
Yeah.
And so when I knew we were going to have to replace David with somebody, I was just thinking about The Wild Wild West. And how I felt as a viewer watching somebody take Ross Martin's place. And so, and I have said this before, like having Scully throw water in his face and reject him. Scully was the audience. And seeing the way he responds to the audience's hatred, which is he just takes it. You know, it was a way of embracing the hostility we knew the audience would have. And answering it through Robert's performance.
That was actually really brilliant. I have heard you tell that story before, and I think that I didn't think it was intentional at the time, but looking back, it was a great move. I mean, seriously, though, you guys should all give yourself props, because honestly, that doing that should have been impossible, and yet you made it work. So, you know, well done.
Some people. Over time, people like it better. At the time, although our ratings grew in season 8, but... online, we were just excoriated every week, the entire season, 8 and 9. We were just roasted alive.
Yeah. But I think, like you said, people find it fun to hate things. I don't understand that mentality, but it is definitely one of those hindsight is 2020 sort of things, because we know Mulder does come back. We know kind of everything ends up, the story does kind of go back to that. So now we can look back and be a little bit more forgiving of it, but
Now I recognize that. I mean, at the time, it was one of my, when I was watching season 8, I would have called it my least favorite season at the time. But looking back on it now, I think it's a great season. It's one of my favorites. And it's just, it's all about your expectations and your experience when you're watching it.
Absolutely.
So people, I think it's getting its fair dues now.
Yeah, I totally get it though. I mean, you're emotionally, you love Mulder, and you love Mulder and Scully together. And it's very hard to, it's impossible to replace that.
Yeah.
And you don't want to see it replaced, and you don't care what the reasons are why it's happening, right? You're just a viewer.
You're feeling wronged. Like the universe has wronged me by taking Mulder away.
Kind of.
But you guys did a great job. I mean, yeah, you had a hard road to hoe with that, and I think you guys did a great job. So can we shift to I Want to Believe for a moment? Because Jen and I actually just did an episode on that. I think that was our last one, right, Jen?
Yeah,
we both are big fans, so you're not gonna, you know, we know that the movie didn't really do well, and I think there were lots of, I don't know, other circumstances and strange things that made that occur. We both really, really enjoyed the movie, and I remember reading something about how you guys actually had planned to do it pretty quickly after The Truth aired, but because of contracts and legal battles and stuff that you had to delay it till 2008. Was there anything in your original, because you said the script was pretty much done, or you had the idea pretty much like laid out, was there anything that had to change significantly because of that time gap that you can recall?
Well, there's a few things here, which is, first of all, when we originally thought the series was, the X-Files was going to continue as a movie series after the TV series ended, I think my expectation was that it was going to be more like the first movie, which is to say, dealing with the alien mythology. Mm-hmm. And Chris did have an idea for a Frankenstein-type story, which is what I Want to Believe ended up being. But the expectation was it was going to be alien-centered. The movie series was going to be alien-centered. And then, yes, there was a legal dispute, and we were just dead in the water till 2006-07. And then they said, okay, good news, we want to proceed, but we don't want aliens. And we don't want anything like the budget you had for the first movie. We want this to be small. We want it to be like one of your Monster of the Week episodes. And then Chris immediately went back to this sort of Frankenstein idea that he'd had years ago. And that really was what we developed. And I think what they discovered, I'll never know why they said they wanted to be Monster of the Week. But what they discovered when they began trying to market the movie was that the X-Files movie audience, as opposed to the X-Files TV audience, is like, where's the aliens?
Right.
And it was just a fundamental miscalculation that you could suddenly switch to a small, claustrophobic, dark Monster of the Week type story. It wasn't even a Monster of the Week when the movie audience wanted something more like the first movie. So that's my sense of why the movie just didn't land. And the studio didn't support it. I mean, they just didn't. I think they saw that research, and then they just basically decided not to market the movie.
Yeah, I remember thinking there wasn't a whole lot of marketing. And I also thought it was curious that was a... I mean, I think you've said this before, but I thought at the time, why are they releasing this in the summer? Like, this should be like a winter movie. It would have... I think that would have helped a lot. So it's frustrating.
We begged not to, but they didn't. Listen.
Well, we loved it, Frank. I was going to ask you, do you know, because the fandom has to know, what exactly kind of doctor is Scully in I Want to Believe? Like, what's her specialty? Do you guys know? Because it's we were like, she's like a neurosurgeon or a pediatric, but she's only been a doctor for a few years. So how is that? Everybody's wondering.
Yes. I think it actually was said in a draft of the script. It was some kind of pediatric specialty, but I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, she is doing the surgery at the end, so it suggests she's some kind of pediatric surgeon.
She's doing real well, Frank. We know Scully is brilliant. But
she still goes on Google for her research. So
exactly. Well, desperate times call for desperate measures, right?
Yes.
I think that what that movie did so well that you guys really didn't have the opportunity, and maybe you didn't have the opportunity to do it before because Mulder and Scully weren't in like an established romantic relationship, whereas in I Want to Believe they clearly are. But you guys really were able to dig in deep on like their relationship and have them actually have some meaningful scenes where they talk to each other about relationship stuff. And we had never seen anything like that before. And I think a lot of, sorry, my dog is barking at me to go out. A lot of people, I think, were not really taking that for what it was in terms of how amazing it was that we got that in that movie.
Yes.
So I think that was the strength of that movie. And I mean, that's why I think it did. That's what I think it did so well personally. I think everything else felt secondary to me. So,
yeah, I think that was important to Chris and to me because we were a little older and we wanted to embrace the reality of this relationship and have those moments together. And I like those scenes in the movie a lot. I mean, I think to me, if I ever came back to the X-Files, if I ever got the chance to come back to the X-Files, that's something I would want more of. You know, more than you have in the original series, I just think, you know, we're not in the 90s anymore. And, you know, television has moved on to a different place. And I want to know, like, what their personal relationship is like and how they feel about things and how they relate to each other, you know, in a really intimate way. And I'm curious about that. You know, I'm still curious about that.
Absolutely.
So are we. We would so be on board with that. That would just make all of the shippers super, super happy.
I think we can all agree that if the X-Files do come back, that if you were a part of it, people would be thrilled about that. So, I mean, that's... I did want to tell you a little story because I remember you said a story about when you and Chris went around LA when Fight the Future opened and you were sneaking into theaters and you the whole thing where the audience burst. I'm sure our listeners have heard this story where the audience burst into groans and shouting when they didn't kiss.
Screaming.
And I actually was, as Jen said earlier, I wasn't a file yet. I hadn't discovered the show, so I actually didn't get that experience. But when I went to see I Want to Believe in the theater, I had a similar experience I wanted to share with you when we first see Mulder pop up in bed next to Scully. The theater I was in, which was packed, by the way, it was opening weekend, but it was packed, went crazy, Frank. Like, I couldn't even hear the next minute of dialogue. And I think it's important that you know that, because that was the moment in the movie that, and when Skinner showed up, people cheered at that too. But that was the moment in the movie that people really wanted to see and were thrilled to see. And it made me think of that story that you told. It was like the reverse of the story that you told. So I wanted to share that with you because
that's a really good point. It's a book into that. I mean, then that was, of course, that was intended. That we wanted that to be a reveal.
Yeah.
And like, yes, we are going to go there. Yes, we are going to give you that. You may not think we are, but we are going to give you that. The thing that took me by surprise in a good way was when Skinner appeared, and I was like, oh, look at all the love for that character that's coming out.
Because we love Skinner.
Yeah.
And we love too that I know Jen and I we pointed this out to each other. I actually just noticed this recently at the very end of the movie when Scully finds Mulder and he's out, you know, passed out outside, and she kind of comes above him. It's an exact mirror image of the Fight the Future. That was intentional. Yes. You're nodding. That was obviously intentional. Okay. I love it. I love it. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Well done. Well done. Well,
that's just another example of how Scully is at least as strong as Mulder.
Absolutely. And
even in the 1990s, women were at least as strong as the men.
Yeah.
I knew it. So
it was great.
Oh, yeah. I think one more question here, and then do you have time to do some little lightning round questions with us before we let you go, Frank? I know Jen is going to especially want to know this. Mulder's brain disease. We need to talk about this. Everybody accuses this of being a retcon, and I hate the word retcon because, in my opinion, I think if something sort of works in retrospect and it makes sense, you can't really call it a retcon. But is it a retcon, Frank? Did you know about this brain disease that Mulder had apparently been dying from all season 7 when they bring it up in season 8?
Oh, gosh.
He's like, I don't remember.
I don't.
They allude to the fact that when he's being, you know, cut open by Smoking Man, or when he's having his brain pieces taken out of him and like putting into Smoking Man's brain in Sixth Extinction, that was the season 7 opener, that apparently something didn't go quite right. And then he had been suffering effects from that, which to me makes perfect sense. But a lot of people are kind of upset because it didn't seem to be acknowledged in any way, shape, or form throughout season 7, which is kind of a relatively happy season. And it kind of comes out of the blue. It comes out of nowhere in season 8. Apollo is really upset about it too, my dog. That's all of that.
Is that either answer is plausible. It's entirely possible that we knew. It's also entirely possible that we didn't and we retrofitted. Because we did both all the time. But in that specific case, I can't recall.
It strikes me as the kind of thing
that might be for the best. It might be for the best to leave it sort of ambiguous. We can see it whatever we want.
Right, yes. Right. It just strikes me as the kind of thing, this is just my personal thing, that like Chris, because he's so sneaky, just kind of holds on to like none of his millions of ideas that he doesn't tell anybody about. And he's like, oh, let's use this. like 3 years later. And I think that's probably the way he works. I don't know him, obviously, but that strikes me as the way he works from some of the things that I see.
Yes. I mean, that happened many times where we're like, we haven't realized it, but actually it fits perfectly if we do this. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know you've heard this story about giving Scully cancer in season four. It was like, it was something I said we should do at the beginning of the season. And there were people who were like, no, you can't do it. I said, yeah, but Piper Maru and Apocrypha, it's established all these other women.
You're
right?
Like, it makes perfect sense.
It's perfect. Like, actually, it's good, weird if she doesn't get cancer.
Exactly.
But it fit perfectly, but it wasn't necessarily inevitable that we were going to do it.
See, I felt the same way, Frank. Jen and I disagree on this. She hates the brain disease. I'm fine with the brain disease.
Yeah, I hate the brain
because
disease.
Because I'm like, you know, it makes sense to me. I would be more surprised if Mulder wasn't suffering ill effects from this ridiculous botched brain disease or brain surgery. You know, I think it'd be more unrealistic if he didn't. So, you know, anyway, I guess like it you was, said, whatever you're looking, whichever way you're looking at it from, there's no objective truth. It's whatever we make of it, right?
Right.
And it was partly, I think, also influenced by my general opinion and emotional approach to the show in season eight, when the brain disease became a plot to sort of explain, you know, a possible sort of alternative of Mulder's behavior. And so there came out this whole, oh, well, he was dying of a brain disease for the last several months. And I was already kind of feeling hostile towards season eight at that point. And I'm like, well, no, I mean, that just makes it even worse now. So it was, again, it was all part of that whole, I'm angry at the X-Files during season eight thing, but I'm still a little bit angry about the brain disease thing. I won't lie, but that's okay. I'm just going to see in it what I have to and just, you know, set aside the things that I can't handle. I still love season eight.
Sometimes you can't escape those initial reactions that you have.
Yeah, I have trouble with it.
Sort of guttural, guttural reaction.
I'm very emotional when it comes to the X-Files. And once I have an emotional reaction to it, I can never really totally change that reaction. I can sort of intellectually change my opinion about things, but it's hard to get past that emotional sort of immediate reaction because it was so important. You know, it was a big part of my life then and now. So for a lot of fans, it's like, it's a big part of our lives. So we get caught up in it.
Yeah, no, that's a compliment actually. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for giving us your time. Before we head out, I'm going to have Jen, unless you have any more questions, Jen, do our little, we call it our fast Frank round here.
Okay. Yeah, here we go. Okay. So we're going to ask you to sort of just try to sort of answer off the top of your head as quickly as you can, just whatever pops into your head first.
Okay.
All right. First question, monster of the week or mythology?
Monster of the week.
Mm. This one's going to be tough. Mulder or Scully?
Oh, I can't answer that. Come on.
No, that's not really fair, is it?
That was just rude.
All right, we'll let you off the hook on that one. This one's precious to me. LA or Vancouver?
Oh, gosh. You know, you're asking me to pick between children here, is what you're doing. I mean, I thought the crew in Los Angeles was fantastic, and I loved them, and a lot of them are still really dear friends. Vancouver made the show, you know, created the show, so that's like a very special era that you can never repeat. So, but I love them both equally.
Fair enough. I'm glad I got a chance to mention Vancouver just because I love the Vancouver seasons, and I'm Canadian, so I was kind of personally offended when it moved to LA, but I got over it. But I'm glad to hear your perspective. I need to remember that LA was awesome too. All right, next one. For yourself, believer or skeptic?
Skeptic. Humble
Fair
skeptic.
Enough?
Humble.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, this is just a fun one. Mulder and Scully's new baby that we know that they're having at the end of season 11, boy or girl?
Do you know they're having a new baby at the end of season 11?
Yes.
We know that Scully is pregnant and that Mulder is the father.
Mm-hmm. No,
so
I know.
Don't mess with us, Frank.
If I had to pick, I'd say girl.
Yahoo!
Yeah.
That's probably that's sort of the general consensus of the fandom too. So we're thrilled to hear it confirmed. All right. This is probably going to be a bit tough, but favorite episode that you wrote?
Favorite episode with my name on it would be Memento Mori.
Woohoo! One of my favorites, too. Favorite episode you didn't write?
Boy, there's a lot of those. I can't just pick one. I mean, I'd have to say Beyond the Sea, Home, Clyde Ruckman's Final Repose, Postmodern Prometheus, Duane Barry, Anasazi, Bad Blood.
Wow. We'll give it to you, Frank, because I love all the ones you just mentioned.
I think you just described Annie and my top 10 right there. Really? That's like between the two of us, that's our top 10 probably. So thanks. We love that. We totally agree. And last but not least, Mulder and Scully, soulmates or platonic partners?
Oh, soulmates.
Yeah. Woohoo!
Right answer.
Yes. Good. We like to get these things on the record.
I think people have got hung up on that. I think if you had a conversation with Chris, he would say soulmates as well.
I actually agree.
All right, we like that. We'll take it.
I need to put this out there because I do think at his heart, Chris is a shipper. I think he just understands that there's a lot more to this relationship than just that. And I feel like that a lot of the people out there who are shippers get very focused on that aspect when they don't realize that there's so many other things to their relationship besides that. That's just, you know, the fun part. So
I think, you know, Mulder and Scully love each other. Mulder and Scully became romantically involved and there's no denying that, and Chris wouldn't deny that either. But I think what he was thinking of, and he doesn't need me to speak for him, but what built the show, what was so powerful about their relationship was before it was sexual, was this incredible respect and trust that they had for each other. That's what's so moving and powerful and sexy, actually. And I think that's still the key to the relationship's appeal, even though it was later consummated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember back in the day we used to say online, every time Mulder or Scully used the word trust, just imagine they're actually meaning the word love. So it used to work really well for us.
Because that's really what it is. Like you just said, that's kind of what it's all about in the end. And that's a really great way to end the show, Frank. That's lovely and wonderful. And we thank you so much for your time, for creating the best show ever, for creating the greatest female character ever.
Well, I can take credit, but I'm very happy to be part of it.
Helping to evolve and create, because you did a lot for Scully. And we are very appreciative of that as fans.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for staying in touch with the fans and for doing everything you do for the fans and for, you know, being so responsive to all of us. We really appreciate that and value it immensely.
Thank you. I enjoy it.
All right, Frank. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, guys, thanks for listening to our interview with Frank. And thanks again to Frank for giving us his time. We had such a great time and we enjoyed talking to you. And thank you for tolerating our excessive shippiness. we tried our best. We really did. thanks, you guys, for listening. And we will see you next time on X-Files Diaries.
Bye.